Welcome to Radio Physics, a collaboration with the Aspen Center for Physics, KDNK Community Radio in Carbondale, and advanced physics students from Roaring Fork Valley High Schools. The students spend a week working at the center during the summer and get to talk one-on-one to some of the distinguished physicists who are here. I'm Patty Fox, and I'm hosting today's program, which was recorded during the teen summer program at the Aspen Center for Physics. With me today are Sharmila Day, who is the daughter of visiting physicists, and Maxine Mellon, the first of our summer gophers this summer. The term gopher refers to a construction job of the person who goes for the hammer or the ladder or the board. And our summer gophers are rising seniors from the Valley's high schools who come here to help us keep the coffee going for the physicists and meet and talk with the physicists during their week here. They'll be interviewing Jim Halverson, who is an assistant professor of physics at Northeastern University in Boston. Jim's research is at the interface of string theory, particle physics, and cosmology, and mathematics. He's particularly interested in the string landscape and its implications for particle physics and cosmology beyond their standard models. I am going to require that you bring it down a little bit because the loop-de-loop of string theories throws me off.
Yeah, so I am a theoretical high-energy physicist, which is a broad field in and of itself where people do many different types of things. My primary interests are in string theory, particle physics, and cosmology, and potential interplays between those subjects. So particle physics is all about the fundamental nature of particles and is tested by experiments like the Large Hadron Collider, and the Higgs boson was discovered in 2012. That was something that perhaps you're familiar with from recent news or now not so recent news. Cosmology is the study of the early universe and the evolution of the universe in particular, and sort of questions of how it was that the things that make us up got here given some processes in the early universe. And string theory is a subject that is about objects that are strings, or more generally, other extended objects, where the basic idea is that the things that we once thought were fundamental particles and really still think are fundamental particles, because we don't yet have experimental evidence for string theory, those things could in principle be extended objects. So instead of having point particles, you would have little loops of string. And so that's more or less what I study. The practical day-to-day is a little different, but those are some of the big questions, how to put those ideas together and how to come up with ideas that might be novel from the point of view of particle physics or cosmology.
What drew you to want to study string theory and cosmology, and why do you think it's important?
My journey into physics began actually out of computer engineering as an undergraduate. And what I learned partway through my undergraduate degree at the University of Virginia is that physics isn't totally figured out yet. And even at the smallest length scales, which is where particle physics lies, and the biggest length scales, which is where cosmology lies, there are just big open questions. So one of the big open questions is sort of how to put together the things that we know about physics into some kind of unified theory or unified framework for thinking about what's happening in the world, or more broadly, the cosmos. And when I entered grad school, string theory was the primary way that people were thinking about doing that. And that's how I ended up in it. And that's how I'm still doing it today. And I think that we're still making progress.
Is there a certain analogy that you like to use to describe your work?
So there's a lot of analogies that I sometimes use to describe my work. One thing that sometimes can be confusing to people is the idea that fundamental particles are actually strings seems a little ludicrous when you first say it. But the fact of the matter is that every experiment that we've ever had has some resolution and some error bars, and it can't see beyond what the intrinsic error of the experiment allows. So when I'm in Boston and I'm speaking with high schoolers in Boston, what I like to tell them is, imagine that I had a rubber band and I hold it in front of you here now, and your eye is the experiment that you're using to see the string, if you would like, the rubber band. You can totally resolve that when I'm right in front of you. But if I were to go to the top of the Prudential Center, which is a very, very tall building in Boston and I held the same thing, your experimental eyes would not be able to do the job of resolving that it was a string and not a particle. From that far away, you probably wouldn't even be able to see that I was holding anything, and you probably wouldn't even be able to see me. But I think that's one analogy that's very useful, that to keep in mind that experiments have limitations and they can only resolve structure to certain length scales. So if strings exist, they're very, very, very small. And I guess the analogy I like is thinking of a rubber band and backing off.
How does using a string to study particle physics make it easier to understand problems than using the idea of a particle?
Well, one thing that's special about the string, that's a great question. One thing that is special about the string is that it has this extra spatial dimension. The particles that we describe normally in particle physics arise in a theory called quantum field theory, which I won't attempt to explain in great detail. But one of the things that's fundamentally different in string theory is that we have this extra dimension. So it's a little bit difficult to explain, but one of the things that's special about string theory is by having this string, there's an extra state, an extra type of physics that is forced on you by the extra dimension of the string, and that's gravity. So when you work out the details of the physics, it's the fact that it has the extra dimension that allows gravity and forces gravity to be a part of the game. So that's one of the things that's very exciting about it. String theory is a theory of gravity, and in quantum field theories, which describe normal particle physics as we normally think about it, and which is true for the Large Hadron Collider but may not be true at the smallest length scales, those sorts of theories don't need to have gravity necessarily, and it's the extended nature of the string that forces gravity on you.
So through all this research that you've previously conducted, is there an overall end goal?
There are many. I am happily a professor now, which is great, which means I'm thinking on longer length scales in my career and, you know, hope to be doing physics for the next 30 or 40 years or hopefully longer. So I don't think of it just in terms of one goal necessarily, but of the list of goals that one might list, one of the things that is interesting to me and to many of the friends of mine that are here at this workshop at the Aspen Center for Physics now is what sorts of ideas seem to emerge naturally out of string theory that might seem really obtuse or baroque purely from the perspective of what is called model building. This is model building is a subject where people try to account for details of particle physics and cosmology using this framework of quantum field theory that I mentioned previously. String theory sometimes give rise to surprises that might look very unnatural from the point of view of quantum field theory. And so one of the interesting things to me is to try to tease out where really is the gap lying. In what cases do string theorists think that there's a very good idea that emerges from string theory that might look totally obtuse or baroque from another point of view? And then whether or not that has implications for how we think about particle physics or cosmology itself. Some of these ideas are potentially testable, which is exciting.
So the concepts that you study are very abstract. What is it like studying such an abstract concept, and how do you test or how do you develop experiments to test the abstract concepts?
That's a great question. Studying such abstract concepts can be fun, but a lot of us need something to tie us down to earth a little bit sometimes. So there's lots and lots of mathematical calculations, and sometimes we're working on aspects of string theory where we're just trying to figure out the theory itself and understand some regime of the theory that was not understood beforehand. But another sort of thing that we try to do is we try to take the cases where we understand string theory pretty darn well already and maybe don't need as much formal progress, and then try to say, you know, if the world was realized by that sort of version of the theory or that type of the theory, what might we expect to see? As far as testing it goes, it is probably the case that in any conceivable future, we will not be able to see the length scale of the string directly. That is kind of a funny concept, perhaps. So keep in mind that when I give the rubber band analogy earlier, that it has some radius, some diameter to it. And unless that's some length scale, unless your experiment can really probe that scale, you're not going to see the stringiness of the string, if you would like. It would look effectively like a particle theory, even though it could actually be a string theory. That said, what I had mentioned previously was that some of the ideas for particle physics and cosmology that come out of string theory, even if it's not directly about testing the string length scale, those ideas can be particularly unusual from other perspectives. And that's good because it gives some sort of differentiation. And one thing in particular that I'm excited about is there's a type of particle called an axion-like particle that has captured the interest of some of my friends for years, and I'm thick enough that I'm just getting interested in it in the last 6 months or year or something like that. But string theory predicts many of these particles. I think that that's something that the string theory community would say is pretty sure bet in string theory. And one of the things that you can do to test this is that those particles can actually interact with the photon. Photons, famously, are coming at us directly from the sun. And so there's a class of experiments called axion helioscopes that basically take a certain type of telescope, point it at the sun under the working assumption that, you know, if these axion-like particles really exist in nature, the sun could produce them. They could then come to Earth, and then a magnetic field in these axion helioscopes could convert them back into photons, and you could potentially detect these. This would not be a direct test of string theory, but it would be a direct test of something that I think is a compelling implication of string theory. And that currently is one of the sets of experiments that I'm most excited about.
So you briefly touched on kind of the not controversy, but differences in people's thinking about in your area. And so my question was, how do your results compare with others studying string theory? And then is there a ton of controversy in this area?
You're asking specifically about what the sorts of things that I do versus sorts of things that other types of string theorists might do.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So I work on a number of different aspects of string theory. There's a lot of beautiful results that have come out of string theory, some of which may be more relevant for describing things like particle physics and cosmology, but others might be more relevant for describing other systems, systems that arise in pure mathematics that, as far as we can tell, don't necessarily have anything to do with the real world, but nonetheless are beautiful intrinsic structures themselves. Another example would be there's something called the ADS-CFT correspondence that drives a lot of work in string theory these days. The basic idea is that these quantum field theories that I mentioned, sometimes you can have a very strongly coupled, strongly interacting quantum field theory in D dimensions that describes it's actually very abstract and broad. There's many things that it could describe, but there's a dual gravitational theory, a dimension higher, where you can describe everything in the strongly interacting quantum field theory in terms of a gravitational description, a dimension higher. This is something else that string theorists are doing, and they're applying it to a number of things, like trying to understand certain systems that involve copper, understand certain systems that involve protons that are strongly interacting, or toy models thereof. And so this is very far removed from the sort of string theory that I am typically thinking about and doing. In the string theory community itself, I think that there's actually really no controversy. Most of us look around and we see that our colleagues and friends are doing valuable things. It just may not be the thing that we're working on. And I think most of us, if we had, more lives and infinite time, would definitely be working on the things our friends are working on also.
So some scientists give value to studying string theory or the idea that there might be multiple universes or pockets of the universe where our laws of physics don't apply. So how do you stay motivated in all of the backlash, I guess, about that?
Yeah, there has been some backlash historically. A lot of the string theory community itself, and more broadly my community of scientists, theoretical high-energy physicists, were often of a similar mind that this is a worthwhile direction to pursue. I think really any time in science when you are trying to do something that is challenging, might lead to a new direction, etc., isn't fully figured out, there's going to be some controversy. And so I don't personally worry about it myself. I think when I was a more junior scientist, I used to worry about it a little more. But at some point, I just realized, look, if you're trying to do something original or move in a new direction, some people just aren't going to like it. And that's the way it is. And one way that, you know, consensus comes about is really by establishing the results firmly. Definitely in string theory, there are many open questions that we still have to answer. I hope no one pretends to the contrary. But nonetheless, I mean, I think it really is our most promising theory of quantum gravity. And that is why so many people are working on it.
Leading off that a little bit, since there is so many intricacies in string theory, how would we possibly know when it is not necessarily a complete theory, but a kind of more concrete?
Yeah, that's a good question. What is, how would you know when you're done, I guess, is your question. Yeah. So part of the thing that's difficult about it is that string theorists use string theory for so many different types of things that for any given one of those types of things, you could give an answer. One thing that we have not yet achieved in string theory, but people are working on and have historically worked on, is trying to realize aspects of the standard model of particle physics that describes all of the protons, neutrons, electrons that make up us, etc. Trying to realize that in the most explicit possible way in string theory. There has definitely been progress in that direction, and we know how to realize many aspects of the standard model in string theory, but there are important details, and they're more than just details, to overcome. For instance, there's something called supersymmetry breaking, which is another thing that I won't try to explain. But certain aspects have been realized. So in the context of particle physics, what the end goal might look like is realizing the standard model in a non-supersymmetric context, explicitly in string theory, in a way that is compelling and agreed upon in the community. I think that we're still a good ways from that, but that's one thing that one might try to do. Another thing that people try to do, and actually a lot of the people at this workshop are studying, is there's a period in the early universe that there's good evidence happened called cosmic inflation, where the universe, the spatial dimensions of the universe, expand exponentially quickly. And it solves many cosmological problems, and there's good evidence for this. And one of the nice things about this is that string theory is an ideal framework for looking at certain aspects of certain inflationary theories, because they can be very sensitive to quantum gravity. So I talked about the standard model because that tends to be where I focus some of my work, or part of my work at least. But some of my other friends would say, okay, there's certain things that we would like to know better about how this period of cosmic inflation is realized in string theory. And for instance, a few years ago, there was some excitement about a potential observation of primordial gravitational waves. That is something that if that were true, it has since gone away, but if that were true, there is some consensus that you would really need control over your effective theory of quantum gravity to be able to describe that physics.
So part of your research, or part of your field of research, tries to find places in, or theorizes that there might be places in the universe where our laws of physics don't apply and there might be different laws of physics. How would we know if we found one of those, and what are the signs that we would use to know if we found a pocket of the universe like that?
Generally, in interviews like this, I try to stay away slightly from more speculative aspects of my research, but it's an interesting question. So there's so-called different vacuum states in string theory. So if you go out to outer space and you get into a region outside of a galaxy where there's less dark matter, or hopefully no dark matter, eventually you would be in a region where there's just vacuum. And a vacuum is sort of a particularly low energy state that you could realize in physics. And you can think of electrons and positrons and quarks and leptons and particles that make up us as excitations out of a vacuum, where excitations on top of a vacuum, if you would like. So one of the things that happens in string theory is that there can be many different vacuum states. I should point out that this and the multiverse idea that you brought up are not unique to string theory. They're really arising in any quantum field theory that has multiple vacuum states. So observing any bubble directly would be a very, very difficult thing. But one thing that you might try to do is, in either a quantum field theory that realizes this idea, or in string theory where you have these many vacuum states, you might start to look at how does physics look in these different states. For instance, it's not like this, but suppose that it were like this. If it were true that the laws of physics in each different vacuum were very, very, very close to one another, very, very similar, then even though there were many possibilities, you would still say that there was some sort of statistical prediction. Like, given those properties, you might expect the existence of a particle that has such and such properties. It's not quite that simple, but definitely there is some hope or idea that there are some things that are arising in the physics of the different vacua that might be somewhat universal, or at least statistically likely. That would be one way that you might be able to explain things that we observe, but it would not actually directly test the bubble idea. It would be indirect.
Taking a slight step back, if you don't mind, to go a little bit more personal, when you were our age in high school, when did you kind of discover this love for physics, or was it much later in your career?
I guess I discovered my love for physics when I was 20 years old, so not high school. In high school, through my own fault, no fault of my high school teacher, I'm not sure that he'll ever listen to this radio interview, but it's really not his fault. I had the misconception that physics was figured out, that, you know, Maxwell and Newton and Galileo and company, they were really smart guys, and of course Einstein, and they all figured it out, that physics was solved, that there were, as far as the fundamental aspects of physics were concerned, that it was all figured out and there were no longer deep questions to pursue. Everything was applications of known physical laws. And in some sense, nothing could be further from the truth. We know a tremendous amount about fundamental physics, and yet some of the biggest questions that have ever been posed are still open questions waiting to be explained. There's a dark matter workshop going on at the Aspen Center for Physics right now, and people there are very excited about the prospect of discovering dark matter in our lifetime. So these sorts of open questions were things that I just was not aware of when I was in high school. And it was really taking a modern physics class in college where I realized that there were still things that were fundamental that had to be figured out. Modern physics pushes you in that direction. Those things are very well figured out, but it really opened up my eyes. So I didn't see it in high school, and I have no regrets about starting in computer engineering, but I'm glad I saw it early enough in undergrad to make the switch.
So you said that you started out in computer engineering. Do you still use computer science in your current research?
I use computer science right now far more than I expected to when I started my professorship in 2015. String theory has large theoretical data sets, not experimental data sets, but theoretical data sets where understanding the laws of physics that arise in string theory require getting control and understanding of those data sets. And this happily falls right into the big data machine learning push that has been happening over the last decade in many different scientific fields. So I have been working in that direction in machine learning, and sometimes people will use the phrase artificial intelligence to try to better understand the patterns, the structures, the solutions that arise in string theory and the implications of them. So I've always been interested in computer science. That's why I started that direction in undergraduate. But I really was in math and physics land for most of my PhD and postdoc, and only got back to sort of modern things in computer science in the last few years.
Could you tell us more about your kind of educational journey to where you are now?
I was an undergraduate at the University of Virginia. It was a wonderful experience. I was in an honors program, which was great. The name isn't necessarily of the honors program isn't necessarily worth that much. Practically, what it let me do is get out of all of my requirements. And so I could just focus, for the most part, on math and physics, and it let me get quite accelerated in that direction. I started at the University of Pennsylvania in 2007, which feels like an eternity ago, and I graduated with a PhD in 2012. That was great. Something I always tell high schoolers when I talk to them, and some of them know it and some of them don't, is that fortunately, in the U.S. at least, and in many other countries as well, PhDs in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the STEM fields, they are paid for, which is amazing. It is a wonderful thing to be able to go and study the subject you love and be given a stipend to live on and to not be piling up student debt. So that was great. So I graduated in 2012, did a postdoc in Santa Barbara at the Kavli Institute for Theoretical Physics for 3 years until 2015. That was an amazing experience. It was a great place to be. And I've been in Boston at Northeastern ever since. It's been quite the journey, but it also feels nice to have landed. So.
And I think, Jim, you allowed us to land in a little bit more solid area in string theory and quantum field theory. So thank you very much. So Jim Halverson is an assistant professor of physics from Northeastern University. And with him today interviewing have been Sharmila Day and Maxine Mellon. We appreciate your time and hope you've enjoyed listening to Radio Physics.